It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medications to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today. We are going to be talking about Alzheimer's, specifically clinical trials. You may not know this, but an estimated 5.7 million Americans of all ages have Alzheimer's. And this number includes 5.5 million people under the age of 65 and approximately 200,000 who are under 65, 5.5 million over 65. So this is really affecting a lot of people in a lot of ways because it affects the families as well. But we're very lucky in this area because we have Dr. Clifford Singer, who is a geriatric neuropsychiatrist, and he's doing clinical trials at Acadia Hospital. And a good friend of mine, Christy Miner, she's been on the show before, and she is now working with him at Acadia as the recruitment coordinator for these trials. It's really exciting to have you both here. Christy, nice to have you back. Dr. Singer, nice to have you on.
Thank you, Carol.
Thanks.
So is that right? Did I get that right? Those statistics of 5.5 million over 65 and 200,000 have younger onset Alzheimer's. They're under the age of 65.
Yeah, that sounds right. You know, these numbers are always changing.
Sure.
Because of the aging of the population, there's a rapid rise in the number of people with Alzheimer's disease.
It is a huge number of people with Alzheimer's disease, but you're looking to try to fix that. So tell me what's going on over at Acadia. What are you doing?
Well, I got here in 2010, recruited to start the geriatric program at Acadia Hospital. And about 2 years into it, we had a large enough clinic, active enough clinic, and seeing lots of people with memory problems, large enough so that we could start a research program. I know that I've always done integrated research into my clinical work, and I wanted to do that when I got here. Once we reached a significant population, a patient population, we were able to start our research program. And over the 4 or 5 years we've been doing it, we've grown. Currently, we have about 8 research trials for different stages of the disease, even for people who do not yet have the disease, but are at high risk for developing Alzheimer's disease.
So with 8 trials, how does this work? Christy, you're the recruitment person. So how do you bring people into these?
Well, interestingly enough, I actually have just come on board because of the new trial. It's called the early trial for people that do not yet have Alzheimer's disease. As Dr. Singer's indicated, up until this point, it's pretty much been people that have been coming through his clinic or referred for an evaluation to his clinic that already have symptoms of memory impairment and problems with thinking. So most of the trials that the team is involved with is for people that, and he can certainly explain it better, with early cognitive impairment or actual Alzheimer's disease. But this particular trial, I'm out in the community and talking with folks that are worried about developing Alzheimer's disease but do not yet have Alzheimer's disease and want to contribute in some way to the research.
So, Dr. Singer, in this trial, if someone doesn't have symptoms, is this the general public can come and try to be part of this, or do you do a test to see if they have a marker or a gene or some credible reason for them to be worried about getting Alzheimer's as opposed to the general worry we all have that this might happen?
Yeah, that's an important question, Carol. So we have 2 trials for this asymptomatic group of people who do not yet have any symptoms but are at high risk. And we determine the risk based on a couple of things. One, if they're between the ages of 60 and 64, if they have a family member, a close family member who had Alzheimer's disease, a parent or a sibling, for example. If they're over 65, they can just be screened for it because they're at high enough risk. And the way we screen people is, first of all, we make sure that their memory is pretty normal for their age. Now, everyone has some memory issues as they get into their 50s, 60s, and 70s. But We test that and make sure it's normal for their age group. And then they if they pass and they're relatively healthy, then they undergo what's called an amyloid PET scan, where we actually are able to visualize beta amyloid plaques in the brain, which is the first step on the road to developing Alzheimer's disease and eventually dementia from Alzheimer's disease. So the science at this point tells us that the earlier you intervene in the amyloid cascade, the more likely it is that we can stop the progression to dementia. We have another study of an asymptomatic population that just looks at their genetic risk. So we do genotyping. We look at the high-risk genes for Alzheimer's disease.
When you do the testing, do you have people who are – they maybe have a meltdown because they have this plaque and now they're really terrified? Is it better to know or not to know?
Oh, that's an important question. We're very, very careful. We have special procedures in this study to assess if a person is mentally, emotionally ready to understand their risk. So what if they have a positive scan? What effect will that have on them? A positive scan meaning we see a lot of amyloid in their brain. What effect will that have on them? And then after they have, so we assess that before, and then afterwards, let's say they have a positive scan, we sit down and we discuss the implications of that. It's not a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. It just tells us that they are at very high risk for developing Alzheimer's disease in the future. It's sort of like having a cholesterol, a triglyceride measured and finding very, very high levels of cholesterol, meaning putting you at high risk for heart attack or stroke. Having a positive amyloid scan is a very, very strong risk factor.
That's the perfect segue to my next question. So you have someone who has this high risk because they've got a lot of plaque. If they have cholesterol-type plaque for heart disease, there are things that they can do to reduce that.
Yes.
What about the brain? Can they scrub that plaque off in the brain?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't involve scrubbing, but it's kind of like that. There's different ways to reduce beta amyloid plaque in the brain. So the two basic ways, one is immunotherapy, using the immune system or antibodies to clear plaque from the brain. That's been tried numerous studies for people who already have symptoms, memory loss, or even dementia. And the results have been disappointing. We think, though, that if you use this kind of methodology, immunotherapy, using the immune system to clear amyloid plaque, before people have significant brain damage or symptoms, then it might be very effective in preventing progression to memory loss or dementia. The other method we use are orally taken medications, pills, in other words, that shut off the enzyme, primary enzyme in the pathway that creates beta amyloid that then leads to beta amyloid plaque. So we can both shut down the pathway that generates beta amyloid that feeds the plaque, or we can clear the plaque from the brain. And these are two methods that we're investigating that we're hopeful can slow or even prevent transition to cognitive impairment and dementia.
So these clinical trials are, the goal is to find a cure or have somebody, maybe not find a cure for someone who has it, but prevent someone who is at high risk from actually developing the disease.
We think that prevention is always better than trying to treat symptoms. We don't have any medical means of stopping the disease at this point or preventing the disease at this point. All the treatments that are prescribed for Alzheimer's disease and other dementias are just meant to improve brain function and improve some of the symptoms of the disease once people have it already or are expressing symptoms. We think that if you intervene early before there are significant symptoms, we can be much more effective. We don't have anything available right now that we can prescribe. There are things that we do to suggest that people do. We know that physical activity and a vegetable-rich diet, sort of a Mediterranean-rich diet or Mediterranean-style diet with not a lot of refined sugar, not a lot of red meat, not a lot of animal fats, but lots of foods of different colors, green, red, orange, blue, and vegetable oils as the primary fat. We know that these things can slow, help preserve cognitive function and slow progression to mild cognitive impairment, and then even slow progression of mild cognitive impairment to dementia. So diet, exercise, sleep is we know that insomnia and also excessive sleeping, more than 10 hours a day, both sleep less than 6 hours a day, sleep more than 10 hours a day, we know that those seem to be correlated, not necessarily causing, but correlated with risk of developing dementia. We know that there are other health conditions like hypertension and diabetes that can accelerate the development of Alzheimer's disease, bring it on earlier.
So diet and exercise. So binge watching Netflix with a bacon cheeseburger, probably not your best cause for action. When we come back, we will talk more about Alzheimer's and maybe how to prevent it with Dr. Singer and Christy Miner. So stay with us. There's much more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. Christy, how could someone take part in this trial? You're the recruiter. What do you tell people? And in turn, what do they say to you? What's the experience?
Well, the first step in the process is we call it a pre-screening call. And basically, it's a conversation over the phone. And they certainly can reach out to me by dialing 207-973-6986. And the primary point of that conversation is to, first of all, answer questions. A lot of people are finding out about us, surprisingly enough, through Facebook. The pharmaceutical company that's sponsoring this particular trial is doing a fair amount of advertisement through Facebook. But also, for example, Joy Hollowell just did a great story through WABI and really explained what Dr. Singer had spoken about in the first segment regarding the buildup of amyloid plaque and getting the PET scan and the fact that people are going to know that as a result of being involved in this study, whether or not they are essentially amyloid positive. So people that reach out to me, for the most part, have already kind of done a little bit of research and are aware of that. They generally have a family history of Alzheimer's at some point, recognize the devastation of the disease, and really want to contribute. A lot of them are worried about their own children, for example. But we've also had folks that say, hey, I'm retired, I'm a former scientist, I like research. There's different motivating factors for people to reach out to us. But we talk about some of the other investigations, you know, medical workup that goes into the screening process, so people are aware, because it's not just age and then are you amyloid positive. First of all, they're looking at all kinds of things to make sure that folks are going to be safe and able to participate in the study, heart function, liver function, and Dr. Singer certainly can go over a lot of that as well. And, you know, general health, there's a really intensive medical workup. And then there's ongoing cognitive screening. One of the things that's exciting for me about this study is all of the secondary outcomes that they're looking at as well, like health utilization, for example, and a lot of those cognitive screens. I just spoke with a woman this a couple of days ago, and she said, you know, I go in for my primary visit, and they're testing me for cervical cancer, and they're testing me for breast cancer. I don't have cancer in my family. I have dementia in my family, but they don't do really anything about that. And first of all, I know there's changes to the Medicare rules with affordable the ACO, So there should be some level of screening. But the reality is that we don't really have, the providers don't have a great set of tools in their toolbox. And I think that as a result of the data that's generated with this study, not only regarding the medication, is it effective? Is it going to avoid additional plaque buildup, which is certainly the hope with this particular trial, the early trial that I'm talking about. You know, are there ways that we're going to be able to identify, help people recognize symptoms earlier, or just be diagnosed earlier, or know that they have a higher risk factor?
Dr. Singer, what goes into, so they've talked to Christy and you've done the screening, and is there a cost for this, or is it free because it's a clinical trial?
There's no cost to the participants. In fact, they get paid a little bit for their time. It's not a lot of money, but it's a little something to reimburse for travel and inconvenience.
So someone calls Christy and they go through the screening and then they're accepted into the clinical trial. Then what happens to them?
Then they're scheduled to come back at intervals. In the first couple of months, there's about 4 to 6 visits separated by several weeks where they get more testing, more questionnaires, and then the visits get spaced out over time. It's actually a 5-year-long study. Yeah, it's a slow process. So if you're, for example, if you're 68 years old and you have a positive amyloid scan, you may not show symptoms for several years. So the study has to be pretty long.
Do you do anything if they have the amyloid plaque, and that was part of, you found that out in the screening process, and now they're in the trial, do you give them medication? Do you make them exercise and eat healthy food? Do you do anything to reduce that plaque and then check them, or is this just a watch and see what happens to these people who have this high risk factor?
Well, they take an experimental medication, which seems to be quite safe. It's already been well studied, but not in as large a population as in this study. And I should say, this is a global study. This is being done over the world, around the world. We're one of 70 sites around the world. We're the only site in Maine, the only site north of Boston. But it is being done nationally and internationally. But they take this medication, and there is a chance of getting placebo. This has to be a placebo-controlled study, placebo being an inactive medication. But they do that every day for 5 years.
And then they keep getting checked to see and having more testing to see if,
checks, that's
if
right.
the medication is working.
Right. They get repeated brain scans and cognitive testing.
If you're interested in doing this, the number to call is 973-6986, 973-6986. Stay with us. There is much more to come with Dr. Singer and Christy Minor. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So, Dr. Singer, the risks and benefits, can you define those of this? They're taking this medication, very well studied. But are there risks to this? And then other than that, what are the benefits of being a part of this trial?
The medication seems to be really well tolerated, but it's still an experimental medication, so we have some things to learn about it. There is very, very close safety monitoring during the course of the study, looking for potential side effects, but it does seem to be extremely well tolerated. The benefits are, first of all, there's a huge benefit to science and the future of aging-related research. We can't solve the problem of Alzheimer's disease without research. It is very, very necessary to do these kind of studies to develop treatments that work. So there's that aspect to it. This is really, I feel an obligation to do this kind of work. And the people who volunteer for these studies also feel an obligation to their children and their grandchildren to advance the science. But there is the possibility of a very real benefit to people who participate. First of all, if the study drug works, which we hope it does, it could be delaying their progression of disease. Now, there is a chance that they can get placebo and inactive medication, but people who get placebo improve also. That's why we have to include a placebo part of the study.
Because the brain is such a fascinating organ. So if your brain thinks something's happening, can you make that happen, essentially?
That's right. There's two things to this. First of all, hope is a powerful thing. So if you're hoping it's helping you, it might actually be helping you. But also there is the visits to the clinic and the cognitive testing and the interactions with the researchers. It's very uplifting to people. They enjoy it. There's that element that helps people as well.
And Christy, during the break, you said that if you have the plaque, there's really nothing that you can do about it, essentially. So not knowing is, there's no benefit to not knowing. People who just throw their hands up and say, I would just rather not know. And is it 100%? If you have this, your risk is really high. Is it high, like 70%? Or are you pretty much, if you have this plaque, you're going down later?
I'll take that one.
Yeah, I'm not going to field that one.
Thank you.
And we don't actually know. 70, 80%, probably it may be approaching 100% if you live long enough. We don't know. But this we will learn that from this study, because people are having these PET scans looking at amyloid burden over time and how many, what their risk is of developing memory problems and dementia over time. So that's one aspect of this study. This study will help answer that question.
I do want to clarify, though, that I certainly don't think that there's no benefit in not knowing. It's a very personal decision.
Right.
And so that discussion needs to happen with people's family. But what I did indicate is that if you do know, really, you don't have any alternatives right now. Like Dr. Singer identified, the only medications that we currently use for people with dementia is to basically boost the brain function. It's not affecting that cascade that he talked about as far as building up the beta amyloid. So this potentially could help people personally if they do have plaque.
That's kind of where I was going, because you and I have had conversations in the past that some people so they don't want to know, but early diagnosis and finding this early is so helpful, because people who deny it or the family covers for them and they don't get treatment early when they see the first signs, then there's really no recourse. You really need to start being treated early. See your doctor if you're having any symptoms at all.
Well, wait a second. Now you're getting into a different topic, which is what is the value of early detection and diagnosis?
Do you see
of
that
cognitive impairment in Alzheimer's disease? And there definitely are many benefits of early detection and diagnosis, but that's a whole discussion.
The whole discussion that you will have to come back for. But in your clinical trial, if somebody has no symptoms and then it's a 5-year trial, and so 3 years in, they're starting to, maybe they're getting, if they're, although they may be in the placebo group, they're starting to get it. Does that all interweave, or am I mixing apples and oranges?
No, it does. If someone during the course of this clinical trial starts to develop symptoms, for whatever reason, I mean, they're at high risk because they have amyloid in their brain. The medication may not be working. Maybe they're on placebo. Maybe the medication is working, but they're developing it now a year or two before they would have otherwise. Whatever, if they're developing symptoms, clinical treatment and the person's well-being take precedence. You can drop out of the study, or you could be clinically treated at any time.
Dr. Singer, Christy Miner, thank you both for being here. When we're off the air, I'm booking you for another show to get deeper into this. If you'd like to hear the show again, log on to wvomfm.com and listen to it in podcast. Thanks for listening.